Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Klaus Seckhoff joins us now. He's the prime mover at Rome Resources, but his experience in the Democratic Republic of Congo goes back many years before he set up Rome. He's going to tell us this morning, hopefully, about some of that experience and what he's learned along the way. Klaus, very good to see you this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much. Very good to see you too, Alistair. I'm since 25 years more or less in the DRC. Started in 2000, around 2000, when I was working in Tanzania, and then started looking at the Democratic Republic, and focused mainly on the northern part in the gold sector. Was difficult at that time to raise some money, but in 2002 we have had some luck, and we created a company which was called Moto Gold Mines. Within 4 years, we had around 20 million ounces in resources that delineated. During that period, we didn't have any major issues there. A lot of people say it's difficult to operate there, but the northern part of the DRC has been always very quiet anyway, and there's no jungle there. So it's slightly different from the south. And the operating climate there was a lot easier too, as you can imagine, there's no jungle there. It's a lot easier to progress things very quickly. And then 2007-08, Randgold made an offer, and then they took the company over. And then it ended up in Barrick Gold in 2018, which is one of their flagship gold production area. And highly profitable for them too, low production costs and good grades and very consistent depositor. After that, I was looking around what else is there. We looked at a few other smaller ones. And then in 2012, we found a project which was called BC, which we vended into Alphamin in 2013. And then discovered one of the highest grade tin deposits in the world, which is already in production now too, and is very highly profitable, and was recently sold off some stake to Abu Dhabi, to an Abu Dhabi fund. So there is international interest for these sort of things. And then we looked around, what else can we find? You know, we had some other deposits too, some copper ones which went into production, like Tiger Resources. But my focus was more on the northern part. And then we looked at a lithium project, Manono. And that within 3 years, that was one of the biggest lithium deposits in the world. As you can see, I never stay with the production guys. I'd rather focus on the exploration, on the first mover. And then when you get to PFS or BFS, then I leave the company usually. And then the board will be changed and the structure will be changed.
So what is it about the DRC that you like? I mean, I'm going to suggest that you like the DRC. Perhaps that's putting words into your mouth. But it's sort of famously quite a difficult jurisdiction. But your activities and your success there seem to suggest that that maybe it isn't, or maybe there's a certain way of going about things that can make things in the DRC.
Well, for a start, it's French, so a lot of people shy away from that, like Australians and or Canadians. So there's no real competition there. There is also not much majors in the country. The junior sector is virtually just me and a handful of other people. There is not like in Australia, where you have 2,800 companies competing for some gold project there. You don't have that there. And then we always look at the risk. And for me, if you're an exploration geologist, the risk lies with the geology, not necessarily with the politics. Because if there's nothing there, you can't make it there. Yeah? So it's a lot higher risk in Australia or Canada, because you've got a lot of companies looking at it. Everything has been looked at four or five times. Nevertheless, sometimes it takes four or five times to look at it, and then you find it. But it's a lot more higher risk on the geological side there. And you don't have that in the DRC. The political risk, I always say, yep, is there, but that can be solved if you address the problem early and continue to talk to your stakeholders in the country. Most of the projects which we had originally, they were partly state-owned, like Soquimo or Jacamin, and or in BC, that's Cominiere, who look after the tin site in the DRC. But as long as you keep your communication channels open, then you get there.
I mean, the political situation is quite a mystery, I think, to outsiders. So you guys at Rome, you had M23 coming across the area in which you operate last year, and they sort of came and then they went, and the Rome share price went down and then it went back up again. So it didn't seem to have any long-lasting impact apart from the fact that you had to cease operations for a little while.
Yeah, when M23, it's not really a large army which came through. I mean, it's a few groups who come through. They have been always around. They have been, yeah, more or less the Burundi and Rwanda border area. This time they moved a bit further south. They don't access the north anyway, so it's very rarely there. So that was the first time they actually came down to the south. But yeah, I mean, we didn't have any incidents there, but as a precaution, we basically evacuated everybody, as Alpha Men did too. So we can't just say, we stay on, and if something happens, so we basically did the same. And yeah, 2 weeks later, we moved in again. The problem usually is then it takes 3, 4 weeks to get everything going again, if you move people.
So, I mean, it's a big country, the DRC. Let's sort of set that on the record straight away. It's very big. And you talked about the geology a moment ago. The Copper Belt in the south, very famous in the mining sector. Then there's sort of where you guys are, more to the east. Are you talking about the north earlier? So there's quite a lot of different aspects of mining in the DRC. And you're talking about jungle as well, and areas which weren't jungles. So, I mean, are there any sort of better places within the DRC to go mining? Are certain areas more geologically well endowed than others?
Well, it depends on if you look at the Katanga area, the south, which you said, that's the copper belt. It's mainly copper, and then there's some zinc deposits there, which are also in Ivanhoe. They are very high grade. They are historic mines. And you actually had also some copper uranium mines there historically. For example, Nagasaki and those atomic bombs where the uranium comes out of that area there during that period. But the eastern part is mainly tin. There is a few gold shows there, but they're more tighter and in the 1 to 2, 3 million ounce range. They haven't been that fantastic, really, if you look at the history there of those mines, of these gold mines. But the northern part, which is at a higher level, it's the extension out of Tanzania, the Greenstone Belt, and that hosts various larger deposits. Funny enough, if you look to Uganda, it has the same belt, but there's nothing there in Uganda. Yeah? So it's just at the western side and on the eastern side. Yeah?
Right. So the DRC, I mean, richly endowed in tin, as you just mentioned. We perhaps ought to mention that it's extremely significant in global terms, the amount of tin that comes out of the DRC, and especially from Alphamin, the project which you were involved in the earlier part of your career.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, tin is one of the main metals on the eastern side, and it's the grade too, you know, which makes it. I mean, in Australia you get deposits 0.1, or in Morocco it's 0.2, 0.3, or 0.4. That would be considered already quite high grade, 0.4 or 0.3, and that is mined underground. Or even in the UK, in Cornwall, there's some. So there are tin deposits around, but they're usually very low grade. And that keeps the price high, you know, at 15,000 US. When it crashes to these levels, that's basically where nobody makes money anymore. Everybody has to close shop. I mean, Alphamin, that would survive. I think their average cost is around 11 at the moment. So yeah, it's highly profitable there, and the grade makes it really. It's the
Okay.
same in gold. The grade are very high. I mean, copper is the same. I mean, in Australia, you'd be already happy if it's 0.2% copper, and in the DRC, you are 2%. That's a bit low grade.
And Rome is encountering similar types of grades in its exploration work at Busy as well, Busy North.
Yeah, I mean that's the difference. So the mineral system on the top is a bit low grade at the moment, but we're finding that as deeper you go, the higher the grades become. And then recently we had some new zones, so we have to drill deeper to see, you know, how they continue. So there's quite a lot of surprises there, and it's early days. You know, we're there since 1 year. You know, so I mean, sometimes in Australia or in Canada, you explore for 10 years and you still haven't intersected anything. You know? So it's that's what I like in the DRC. You can guarantee intercepts. You can't guarantee the grade initially, and the size of the resource, but you certainly advance a lot quicker.
But your exploration activities at Ro with Rome are quite extensive, relatively speaking, for a junior miner. I believe you've got three or four rigs, or you've had three or four rigs at work on the project simultaneously.
Yeah, that's basically also because in the DRC you don't have any expenditure commitments on the licenses. The only thing what you have high license fees, so you actually try to advance the project as quickly as possible so you can shed 50% and reduce your license fee costs. And on top of that, you know, if you have one rig there, the overheads are pretty similar to four drill rigs. So it's always better to have more drill rigs on site. As it doesn't cost you much more.
So you mentioned Gécamines a few minutes ago in the conversation. Do you guys have a state partner or a local partner with you at work on Rome?
You have some local partners, but not a state company, who have a little or a small stake left in the company, direct interest, and some shares.
So do they contribute any costs or are they carried?
No, that's all free carry. But the free carry is not that big. It's around 20, 20, 30%, depending on which license. And we can buy the projects at a certain fixed price already. And we are in the process to do that too.
So do you sort of see any other assets coming across your desk, Klaus? I mean, it seems like the mining sector might be picking up a little bit at the moment. I don't know if you get that sense, but there seems to be quite a few fundraisings happening. And I wonder if you are sort of interested in cutting any more deals, given your experience of putting together projects in the DRC.
Yeah, I get quite a lot of projects there, but I try to stay focused and not to run around the globe again. You know, I've been everywhere from Russia to Brazil and everywhere in Asia. I stay since 25 years in the DRC has been pretty good to me. So I refrain from doing anything else in other countries usually. So there is a few projects in the DRC also close to Rome. You know, we're looking at. To expand the areas there, and stay focused on it, not to jump around everywhere.
Do you feel that the outlook for tin is relatively favourable?
Yeah, I mean, As we discussed earlier, there's hardly any tin deposits around, and if somebody finds it, it's low grade. And I mean, if you find something in Australia, it takes a 7, 8, 9, 10 years to get into production. So it's a long process. And yeah, there's a shortage there. But even if the market would be in balance, you know, there's not much mines around, you know, it's who can produce at these levels. So 32,000, 35,000, I think, is a reasonable price, but it can always overshoot, as we know. You know, I mean, when BC shut down, then it went up $5,000 overnight. So it's quite sensitive to any shocks.
It's quite interesting to see that price movement just on the closure of one mine.
Well, because they're supplying 8.5% of the world mark of the world supply, so that's quite significant. You know, most of the other mines have a lot smaller sort of contributions, and then the majority is alluvial in Indonesia, Malaysia, and also in the DRC too. There's a lot of alluvial, so there is not really consistent supply there.
And how do you think the Rome projects will end up comparing in size to the Alphamin project?
Well, from the footprint which we had, you know, we were pretty happy to say it could be double or triple, but we haven't changed that outlook at this stage. It just needs drilling and time, you know. That's the only issue.
I believe there's a similar style of mineralization to some of Rome's projects elsewhere in the world. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you have which is also one of the biggest tin producers in the world, in Peru, San Rafael. I mean, they started as a copper mine at around 2, 3%, which is exactly what we had in the first intercept there. And then after, say, 300, 400 meters average depths, you know, they came into a zone which was a transition zone where there was a little bit tin there, low grade initially, and then they came into the pure tin zone, and that's around 2, 2.4%, I think, the average grade, and it's now one of the biggest tin producers.
Yeah, so you can draw a read across to Busy North.
Yeah, so again, you know, they didn't know that will continue or become a tin mine initially, but it makes sense, you know, if you look back at the geology, you know, and then the high temperature, low temperature metals, and the last one which I fall out is copper rather than tin. Tin is a little higher temperature, so it has to be deeper.
So you mentioned copper. What copper present on the Rome projects? So any other metals there
Well,
besides?
there's also zinc there.
Yeah.
I mean, the first intercepts were 90 meters at 2, 3, 4% zinc. So there is potential there that there is also some zinc as an add-on product there. Yeah.
So what's next for Rome then? What will we be looking out for in terms of news flow in the
I
coming
think
months?
we're pretty close to have some results coming soon again soon, and then with the new discovery and then also with the deeper levels, I think, you know, we'll slowly show the market, you know, that we are onto something big at the end.
Yeah, and so what about resource upgrades, perhaps in due course, or
Yeah,
any
we
other?
have that. We have an independent consultant at the moment. They are working on that already. So yeah, that's all on course.
Do you expect to put together any economic studies at any point?
Probably not initially economic studies, but a resource model, so that we can add on to that one over the next 12 months. Probably not economic studies, but everybody else can put it into an economic model and work out what that is worth. So it's probably a bit early days to start with that one because most of the resources will be inferred or only and not measured.
Right. So we'll sort of watch this space on that. Do you see any other do you see any sort of greater or rising interest in the DRC in the areas where you are? Do you think more companies are going to come in as time goes on, or is it sort of fairly, I mean, you were mentioning that the Aussies don't particularly like going there. Do you think it'll sort of continue to be the same sorts of players that you've used?
There's a few majors sniffing around again. I mean, Rio, they're watching what we're getting. We had various discussions with them. So they're trying to get in, but for them, if there's more copper there, then I think that would be a lot more interesting for them. But then there is also, again, Chinese companies will be looking at it naturally. I had some meetings the other day in Paris about that. So there is interest there for that, and majors and mid-tier companies and private companies.
I mean, there are some big names in the DRC, aren't there? Like Ivanhoe and Glencore are two of the ones that stand out. Some sort of Israeli deal makers have become infamous over the years for the various things they've done there too. But it is often perceived as a jurisdiction for the big fish that really that can really make it work. Do you
Yeah,
think that is?
historically there were the big companies in there. Also Rio, I had joint ventures with Rio up in the north on iron ore. So it's they were all there and they're still looking around. For them it needs to be big. And then I remember 2007, 2008 in the crash. They all got burned. The year before they took over all low grade sort of deposits in the DRC and Zambia. And they had to write them down, and also in West Africa. So the majors are quite cautious about that now. A lot more frugal and sit back and watch.
So when you travel to the DRC yourself, do you end up seeing other mining executives and operations people in the hotels and bars as you travel around? Are they sort of prominent and visible?
Before, yes, but I must say, I think 3 or 4 weeks I was there was empty. There was nobody there. It's quite funny now. It's probably for a start the juniors having a tough time also in Australia and or Canada. So it's not that the money is very flush there because I mean if you look around the gold price is very high, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all the gold juniors doing very very well. It's very selective and a difficult market to raise money.
Yeah, it has been very tough over the last 6 months. I mean, there does seem to be some signs of life now. I've seen a few major fundraisings in the last few weeks in the London market. Do you get any sense of that yourself from where you sit?
Yeah, it's getting a bit easier. I mean, 6 or 8 months ago, you couldn't get even an interview or a telephone call. So there was no interest there. But it's better now. I think the competition is naturally there with AI. And if you're a 20-year-old guy or a 25-year-old guy, in the old days, they all looked at junior gold mining and junior stocks in the mining sector. And now you've got another option there. The other ones are, I mean, even a Tesla. Or an Nvidia, you can double your money or half your money within a day or two. So they have become very liquid too, these big stocks, and also very volatile.
It was one of the striking things about the deal that created Rome Resources, that actually it was almost impossible to do anything in that market, and yet you guys managed to put that deal together and make it work and get it away. I mean, was there any sort of special tricks or skills that you deployed in order to make it happen?
I think in the junior sector it's always track record. I mean if I've never been in the DRC, I wouldn't have raised any penny. Everybody would said, "Oh, well, what are you doing there?" That's an advantage if you have done something before there, and then if it has been successful, that helps again. But even that wasn't that easy. Tin, because tin is a very small market. A lot of what do you call it, fund managers or broker basically tell you, it's too small for them, and it's too volatile. And yeah, so it's because I mean, if the tin price goes from 45,000 down to 15, as it did, that's pretty tough then, for the stocks.
Yeah, although tin sort of comes and goes in popularity, doesn't it? I remember some years ago there was a very influential report put out by MIT in the USA that was used to market some tin companies. And a lot of people were saying tin was going to be the most desirable metal of them all to have in the future due to the nature of electronics and various other factors.
Yeah, I mean, tin naturally, is everybody needs it for a lot of things. So it's a metal, you know, where there will always be demand there. It will not go out of fashion or so. So yeah, long term, it'll be certainly very sought after.
Do you imagine that after you've exited Rome, hopefully with a successful outcome, you'll go back into the DRC for another deal?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Are you? And
Oh,
so
yeah.
that leads me to ask you, which commodities would you favor at the moment then in that?
Gold is always easier, you know, because gold doesn't go down from 3,500 to 300 again. You know, production costs are in Australia, the production cost, I think, is 2,500 or 2,800 AUD now. So it doesn't have the volatility. It has a bit of volatility, but not like tin or other commodities, because even though the demand is very volatile, but at the end of the day, there's always gold believers there, and they won't go away, and it just continues. So it's a different sort of market. And for gold deposits, it's the same again, like tin. You know, it's very difficult to find something. I mean, if you watch Barrick, they just converted their name to Barrick Mining, and they're focusing on Pakistan copper deposits. I mean, because I can't find anything. I mean, a company like Barrick needs 12 million ounces that it changes the bottom line. With 2 million ounces, they can't survive. So it's very difficult. And those projects, you know, there's not much on the planet which are easily available. Or if they are available, you know, then it depends on, you know, on the jurisdiction, the environmental regulations, which is another risk for mining companies. So it's very difficult.
So you've had success in the DRC with gold before. Where do you think is most prospective inside the DRC for gold these days?
Yeah, the northern part is very prospective. We had some other ones in the center, close to Burundi and Rwanda, but they only came back with 1 or 2 or 3 million ounces, and we dropped them. It was too small. It wouldn't have made it.
So are you saying that to make it in the DRC, you really need a big gold deposit?
Big deposit, yeah. I mean, I had another project in Moto Gold Mines, which was Kilo Gold Mines, which is the Adumbi project. That's another group works on it. Barrick has a stake in it because of the old Moto Gold Mines relationship there. But 2 or 3 million ounces is very hard. It's the infrastructure cost is too high. And then your operating costs. So it depends on, you know, how the size and the bits and everything else, you know, overburden, etc., strip ratios. So it's not an easy play, 2 or 3 million ounces.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I suppose if you're going to talk a really big gold deposit, you're going to be looking for partners for that as well at some stage.
Yeah, I mean, if you recall, you know, in 2008-09, you know, when Randgold made the bid on Moto Gold Mines, they couldn't get the money too. Even Randgold couldn't get it, so they needed AngloGold to come in and chip in half of the money. And then the infrastructure cost, the whole what CapEx and infrastructure cost was at the end 1.8 billion. And if you look at the pre-feasibility and the feasibility, that was around 600 million. So the final costs are quite high. I mean, even an Ivanhoe with Kamoa, one of the largest copper deposits in the world, they couldn't get Friedland couldn't get the money. He needed Zijin to come in to take 50% stake and finance it. So it's these big mines, you need a lot of money, deep pockets, and it's not that easy to find.
Yeah. So how do you think the DRC compares to Tanzania, its neighbor, when it comes to gold mining projects? Because there's some big projects in Tanzania too these days. Do they compare at all? I mean, there's obviously some geological similarity, but what about on the operations side?
Well, I worked in Tanzania for 6 years. I had Back Reef and a few other places there. We sold one of them to Resolute, and then the other one was sold to Gallery Gold way back in 2000, I think around 2001 or 2002. The deposits, I mean, if you look at Bulyanhulu, for example, which Barrick took from Pangaea. Very difficult too. Big market, big deposit, 8, 9 million ounces, but very skinny, 1 or 2 meter, pinches and swells. And for them, it was very difficult to make money out of that one. The only one which was successful was Geita, which was bought by AngloGold. But the other projects in Tanzania, they're not that sizable. It's and Tanzania has is also high operating cost. Even if you say if you look at it and think, oh, there's no jungle there, but it's still very expensive to operate there. And infrastructure is also very almost always very bad.
And there's also historically there's been some disagreements between mining companies and the government in Tanzania. So it's not as if it's been easy to operate there.
That comes on top of it. Suddenly the top tax rate was 50%, or they lost 50% of the project. I mean, I was when I was there, it was a junior mining company which was called Spinifex Gold way back. We were in court every year, and
Right. That's
all
funny.
the deal for everything, you know. So it was just and the people are a lot more aggressive than they are in the DRC. So if you have artisanal miners there, very aggressive, you couldn't work there. You need security in the DRC. Nothing. You don't need that.
What about ESG in the DRC? I mean, it's sort of a buzzword these days. Not everybody, especially in America, really likes the phrase ESG. But do you sort of feel that the DRC, the ESG efforts are appreciated? And if so, what is the most effective way of doing ESG in the DRC?
Well, you have to do it if you're a public company, you know, so you can't neglect that one. But I mean, the majority, you know, of the mining activities in the DRC is still artisanal. So, it's not regulated really, because there's not much companies in there. But it's getting there, you know. It just takes time.
Do you think the DRC is do you think it's going to develop politically? I'm talking about the recent interest that the USA, the Trump administration seems to be taking in the DRC. I'm not sure how real the interest is, but it does seem that the DRC is sort of coming onto the map again in terms of global politics. Do you think that's going to make a difference to the country going forward?
Probably not overnight, because in the DRC everything takes a lot longer. But it could have an impact. It might bring even the Europeans or other countries back into the country. But at the moment, I mean, there's no American operations or companies operating there in a big way. And it's mainly Canadian, and then you got Glencore out of Zug in Switzerland. But otherwise, nothing. I haven't seen much activity there.
Would you say the Chinese are influential in the DRC?
98% of all the projects belong to Chinese companies. Oh. They own everything. They're basically what they've done, you know, when everybody else packed up, they just came in and built all the infrastructure in Kinshasa, in the countryside, everywhere else. And in return, got licenses, and they don't have that what do you call it pathway, you know, to production. You know, they don't need a PFS and a BFS, which takes 8 years. And Congolese people or Congolese manager also look at tomorrow morning. Mining has to start, you know, not in 8 years or 9 years. And the people want to be employed. You know? So there's always pressure of on even on my companies, even though junior companies, to start spending money on hospitals and schools, etc., etc., which we do, you know. But we can't spend millions of dollars for social activities really if you raise $2 million for exploration. But the there is a long time frame needed for a Western company compared to Chinese companies. And Chinese, they have money in the bank, you know. So if they need 200 million or half a billion for infrastructure, it's tomorrow morning, it's there. In the in for us with European Union, if you want to get that sort of infrastructure money, that takes you 4 or 5 years.
Have you done deals with Chinese companies yourself?
Not with Chinese companies, but with Chinese individuals who have access also to projects and also to funds.
Right. So the Chinese are sort of present in the DRC on many different levels, it sounds like. Individuals, companies, political influence.
Yeah, definitely. And in all sectors, it doesn't really matter, if it's agriculture, mining or infrastructure. They have the resources for that.
So mining in the DRC is presumably a fairly influential part of the economy. Is it a major contributor to GDP, in your understanding?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I can't tell you exact numbers, but I would say that the majority of revenue comes from mining. Agriculture, there is a little bit there, but it's not that widespread like in other African countries. I mean, the majority of the country is really jungle with no infrastructure. So it's not much. You would have to spend millions, billions of dollars.
What's the local expertise like, the skill sets of the local people in terms of mining? I mean, there's been mining in the country for decades. Are they sort of pretty good now at mining themselves?
I mean, you can get a lot of stuff in the Katanga area, definitely. I mean, you got big cities there, and the backup there for the working population to work in mines is certainly there. That's not a problem. I mean, you can get also geologists in the country. So we usually tend to have only one expat, maybe two in the companies, and then the rest will be all locals. We not otherwise the overheads. Massive, because everybody expects if they work in the DRC, double and triple salaries for a start, then you have to fly everybody in and out. So,
Yeah. So, and the locals presumably appreciate the employment opportunities that you're providing there.
yeah, I worked with quite a few people there who were there since 10, 20 years with us. So we stick to those people usually because we know how they think, what they're doing, and how reliable they are.
So, for example, on the drilling which Rome Resources has been doing recently, what about the drill crews? Are they Congolese or are they from
Oh,
elsewhere?
we have several drill crews there. The first part was poor performance, so we have flown in a person who checks that out and pushes them to perform. But it's not that easy to get drilling companies into the DRC. For a start, it's high import taxes, and then once you operate there, they have high operating costs, and then the spare parts to get them on site is not that easy either, so you have to stick with the crews which you have, even though if they're not the best ones, but there's no other option there. And then we're not drilling hundreds of thousands of meters, so we can't get a big company coming in. If we look for a contract of 2,000 or 4,000 meters, there's only a handful of companies in the world who would even look at it.
So where do you send your assays to then?
That's the other thing. You have a logistical system there where it goes to Bunia or it goes to Valikale, and then from there we fly it then out. And then you need permits for everything. You can't just ship it out without a permit. So then it sits in a warehouse there till you get your permit, and then we fly it over to Lubumbashi. And then depending on the high grade, if it's very high grade, then we have to send it to Vancouver, or you send it down to South Africa. So,
So just, sorry, go on, Klaus.
the prep will be done in Lubumbashi to get it down to a 50 gram sack or 100 gram package. But from there, then we can send it or fly it and out to international labs.
And on your initial drill results, you've been putting out some indications of grade or at least mineralization gleaned from XRF, haven't you? How useful do you find XRF technology in
Oh.
this
For a
area?
start, we can say that it's tin there, it's copper there, or zinc. The grades, depends on the angle grinder which we're using. Then grades are quite reliable, but we tend not to put them out because then everybody expects all the time results, and then if they don't match the final results, then everybody is disappointed. But we certainly can say with the XRF that there is grade there. We can look at the widths, we know what the width is. But with the grades, they fluctuate a bit.
I mean, the good thing about XRF is it's fairly immediate. You can use the XRF and basically announce what the XRF has demonstrated without waiting for any build up of time at assay labs.
Well, it's also because tin and copper shows up in the drill core, so you can see it. While if you're drilling a gold deposit, if it's a 2 or 3 gram gold deposit which is disseminated, you won't see anything. So you have to wait till you get the results.
Right. So, I mean, you mentioned that there are some assay results coming down the line from Rome. How long do you think it's going to be till they get
Uh,
announced?
should, should be the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. Again, that all depends on the logistics. Sometimes there's a delay in the pipeline there. But everything is now back to normal. I mean, we moved everybody to Kisangani and started putting a logistical system there in place, but we're back now where we were before. So, yeah, I don't want to say exact dates, because that varies.
Yeah, I mean, markets sometimes go quiet over the summer, don't they? The UK markets anyway. Do you think, I mean, there won't be any slowing of the pace on the ground with Rome, though, I imagine.
No. We have actually some interest out of Dubai. They're coming on site in August, so it will tick over. So the markets might be more quiet, on the liquidity probably, but everything is continuing as normal for us.
And before we close it out, Klaus, how do you sort of see the wider market? We mentioned sort of in the middle part of our conversation that there have been some financings happening recently. I mean, you've got long years of experience in the mining sector. Do you think the mining sector is about to come out of a period of hard times that it's been in, or do you think there are more hard times to come?
No, I think we'll be over that one. So I'm pretty confident. I mean, it was really a long period. It was 4 or 5 years, pretty tough. And I've never seen it that long, that tough. Despite having rising commodity prices, all-time highs everywhere, there was very little interest for anything. So I think we're pretty close for a breakout there.
Yeah, it was amazing to see the gold price hitting record highs and the gold exploration sector completely unmoved by this high
Yeah.
price. That's really astounding.
I mean, I watched some other Canadian companies who operate in Côte d'Ivoire. I mean, they had outstanding results, world-class results, and the share price did go down, not up.
Yeah.
So,
Amazing. Well, let's hope for better times ahead. Klaus, it's been really fascinating talking to you. Hopefully we can do this again before
yeah.
too long, and I wish you all the best with the ongoing work on the ground with Rome Resources.
Yep, same to you. Thank you very much for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.